Well, perhaps reality is starting to bite that the Fed won't cut before June, and even that is increasingly being called into question. Producer prices have added to the nervousness in the US and elsewhere that this last mile of getting inflation down is taking longer than imagined. Have equity markets at last started to pay attention, and bond markets, which have also been hit by oil, up a fair bit again today. We'll look at why that is. It's Friday, the 15th of March, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, it's been another soggy day for equities in the United States. They started well, but then it was downhill all the way to the close. A 0.4% fall in the Dow at the close. S&P down 0.3%. 0.3% down for the Nasdaq. There has been a bit of a climb back towards the close, but it's still all deeply in the red. The FTSE 100 in the UK closed down 0.4% as well. Just 0.1% lower for the Dow, though. And a 0.6% rise in the US dollar with a 0.6% fall in the Aussie, which is down to 65.8. US cents. The same for the euro. The pound down just 0.4%, and a big rise in bond yields. 10-year treasuries up 10 basis points. The same in Canada and Italy. In fact, we've got this narrowing gap lately between Italy and Germany. So, for example, today up just 6 basis points for 10-year German bonds. It up 7 in France and the UK. Aussie 10 years were up 4 basis points yesterday to 4.05% on futures now. 10 basis points higher than that. And oil is high as well. WTI is 1.7% higher, 1.4% higher for Brent, up over $82.50 a barrel. Both have pared back a little. They were well over 2% up earlier. So there are clearly inflation concerns. NAB's Ken Crompton joins us from Sydney. Just look at those bond moves overnight, Ken.
Yeah, good morning, Phil. I think the pie day markets with the data getting set in a circle there, I think is a big part of the conclusion there. So much steeper curve out of the US, yields up 10 points, as you said. Combination of strong producer price pressures coming out of the US PPI numbers alongside a pretty soft retail sales print, just leaving the market with the view that, well, you know, consumers are slowing down, yet the price pressures are still there. So your classic, you know, it's only one day, of course, but if you want to put these things into a box, it's your classic stagflationary data print. And then interestingly, the other third piece of US data, and we'll get into this in more detail, I assume, though, was initial jobless claims dropping back as well. So very, very mixed outcome. Yeah.
Although they're not a big move on those. I think it's the PPI is the big one, isn't it? I mean, so retail sales, they're up after that 1.1% fall in January, but not as much as expected. So, I mean, if there is a soft landing, it's going to be bumpy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a much smaller rebound. And I think the one that's getting a bit of attention too is the control group, as they call it, which is the measure that feeds through into GDP. That was flat on the quarter. So we have seen the Atlanta Fed's GDP now estimates slipping down a little bit, so, which has been the trend in that measure through Q1, you know, coming off the back of some pretty decent US growth figures in Q3 and Q4. So, you know, the extent to which US household consumption is going to support that above trend growth going forward, this is sort of one data point that puts that into question. You know, you add in the NFIB survey results from earlier in the week, you know, as you were talking about on here the day that came out, it does sort of just point to a few sort of cracks in different sectors of the US macro picture, where you've got consumers potentially slowing down a little bit, the small businesses feeling the pinch a bit more than might be evident in what you're seeing in terms of overall headline stock market outcomes.
And then the producer prices at the headline up 0.6% month on month, which is twice what was expected. So that was a shock.
Yeah, that was a much bigger surprise. I think looking through the bits and pieces there, in terms of people updating their core PCE estimates, which is obviously the number that the Fed is keen on, consensus. Well, there's no consensus yet, but early results from a few of the analysts that I'm looking at in terms of updating their PCE numbers are still showing it's probably going to land on a slight decline from that number just over 0.4 that we got during the previous month. So I guess the key conclusion there is that it's not necessarily pointing to a big sort of reacceleration of US CPI, but it does just point, or US prices in general, but it does just point to just how stubborn the price pressures are at that input level, and that's where it's going to be really hard to maybe eke out this last little bit of the inflation reduction. Yeah, this sort of last mile this year is going to be the hard bit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. Which is what we'll call today's episode, the lengthening last mile. So is it? It does, if it is stagflation or even just stagnation, I mean, those figures, if retail is starts to subside as well, I mean, it's only going to get worse the longer interest rates stay high. And it looks like they're going to stay higher for longer. So even June now is being priced down, isn't it?
Yeah. Pricing for Fed over the course of this year has been trimmed back. I think very briefly today, we did have less than three 25-point cuts priced by December. So a bit of an interesting, probably more of a psychological benchmark than anything, given that's the Fed's implied path from their dot plots was three cuts for this year. It's actually settled back around that level now. But yeah, the first cut now sort of definitely firmly back in July in terms of pricing. So, I mean, as you'd expect, the PPI, they're sort of really pushing back against the possibility of them easing here, even in May or June now.
Yeah, well, you know, there's so much concern. Even the equity markets have started to pay attention to it. So, you know, we've seen a fall a couple of days in a row. Now, Tesla, interestingly, is down 4% today. They had a downgrade by Wells Fargo, who are not convinced their new Model 2 is mass market enough, but it's not just Tesla, right across the tech space. So if rate cuts are delayed, I guess we can expect, you know, further adjustments to this buying frenzy that we've been seeing lately. You mentioned the jobs as well. So yeah, initial claims were up last week, but not as much as expected. But the four-week average was 208,000. That actually hasn't moved. But I mean, the direction is generally lower. But, you know, not enough, I wouldn't have thought, for us to see wage pressures. Or is that the concern, that they'll start coming back?
Well, I guess it's more just the growing wedge between what we're seeing in terms of things like the jobs layoff series or the warning notices of job layoffs. You know, we are seeing a bit of a modest downward trend in job openings. So there's sort of near consensus expectations that that increases in job or increases in initial claims are coming. Yet it's just been sort of one of the mysteries of sort of this late cycle phase in the US that just doesn't seem to be quite coming through yet. So obviously a good outcome in the short run, and you know, I'm guilty as well of saying that the turnaround is around the corner. I still think it is there, but it's just not coming through yet, and that does point to higher for longer. And I guess to that extent, you know, if we do sort of break down that the sort of softness in equities, just looking at the S&P overnight at the moment, you know, down at the bottom there is all your typical interest sensitive sectors, you know, financials, utilities, real estate. They're leading the declines. So, you know, consistent with rates staying a bit higher for longer. At the other end is energy, which is having its own issues overnight as well.
Yeah. Yeah, before we talk about that, just if it is taking longer and we're seeing more people out of work and government debt starts to go up, how does that influence things? So the UK had a budget last week where, you know, there were massive welfare cuts in their forecasts, which are just not going to happen. So they're going to see increased debt. And then we just had Canada looking on Bloomberg today, reckoning that they're going to be selling $250 billion, that's a quarter of a trillion, in Canadian dollars to convert their debt in the next financial year, which is 22.5% higher than this year. So what does that do for the appetite for government bonds if we start seeing government debt, you know, around the world creeping up year by year?
Well, I mean, the simplistic theory of supply and demand tells you that more supply will increase the price if demand doesn't move. But, I mean, when it comes to government bond yields, it's our strong view that supply is something that probably matters for, you know, somewhere in the region of the tens of basis points, you know, in the short to medium term, whereas it really is sort of driven by the economic fundamentals. You know, if we go back to that period last year where there was sort of a massive confluence of factors that was pushing US yields up, you know, dramatically, you know. Yeah, we'd argue there were sort of momentum factors in the market as well as a few other things that were going on at that point. It wasn't really just all about the sort of increase in US government issuance. And you know, if we look at yields now at 5%, yields back then at 5% in the US versus barely over 4% at the moment, you know, how much has the supply picture actually changed? Well, it hasn't really that much. It's just that inflation expectations are better controlled. So I still lean more towards fundamentals for driving government bond yields than anything else, especially in the developed markets where there is a steady bias of buying.
Well, they will have been impacted, of course, a little bit by oil today because it's up again. We talked about the drawdown in inventories yesterday. Since then, we've had the IEA saying the oil market is shifting from a surplus to a deficit if OPEC Plus was to extend its production cuts through to the end of the year, which is, I think, what they're planning, then they've upped their forecast by 110,000 barrels per day extra. Actually, OPEC has a much higher forecast than that, but they're still not planning to up production. But that's a thing, isn't it? If we're moving into a situation where there's a shortage of oil, we're just going to see oil prices go crazy.
Yeah, and that's added another. That news has added another 2% to crude overnight. I think it was about 3% gains yesterday. So, I mean, I guess I'm also wary that last year we were sort of in a persistently bullish environment for oil price forecasts that never quite came off.
We're talking 100. We were saying, are we heading to 100 last year, weren't we? We never got anywhere near.
Yeah, and instead, if it wasn't for the OPEC oil price cuts, we probably would have traded dramatically below the $70 point, even through various points last year. So, yeah, just beware some of these forecasts, I suppose. But look, if at face value, yeah, sure, supply deficit should put pressure on prices. But at the same time, you know, those cuts that OPEC has made, you know, presumably those can be turned back on relatively quickly as well. So it's not a one-way street in that sense. So it's not all, maybe it's oil higher, but not necessarily all to the moon. So
yeah, all they need to do, issue a press release and turn the taps on. Yeah, it's not too hard, is it? The message today is, isn't it? It's just, or this week, is that things are taking longer than we thought perhaps. What does that mean for China then? Today the medium-term lending rate, the 1 year, is it staying where it is today, do you think?
It's picked to stay unchanged. I've got no specific insight to say whether it will or it won't. But, I mean, looking at where that consensus for unchanged is sitting, there is a pretty sizable minority of people looking for a cut. So I think that's coming out of some of the rhetoric. I mean, obviously setting the 5% growth goal at the People's Congress last week or the week before, that's sort of fueling some expectation that, you know, this sort of long desired dream sort of post pandemic of China doing more broader fiscal stimulus might still be there. I don't necessarily see that's going to be the case in the short term. They've got a longer run structural game at play, you know, despite that 5% target being out there. So I don't see too much risk of a move today.
We've been waiting for a long time for it, haven't we? So New Zealand's manufacturing PMI is out today, and early tomorrow morning, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey, including, of course, inflation expectations. We also get industrial production for February for the US as well, because it fell in January. In fact, manufacturing production was down 0.5% month on month in January, so more evidence of weakness there, but obviously not enough weakness to compensate for this pesky, persistent inflation.
Yeah, and I guess another possible source of pesky inflation in some parts of the world is these long-awaited Ringo wage negotiations in Japan. That's out at 4:15 tonight Tokyo time, so well after the Sydney close. Rodrigo and Ray are talking about that at length this week and the implications for the BOJ, but we do have a time for that. That's going to be pretty keenly watched ahead of that BOJ meeting next week. So that's going to be another thing to add to your list of things to beware for on the Ides of March today.
Do you know what? I love the fact you've been doing this with me for several years now. I love the fact that you have mastered the art of the segue. It's a beautiful thing to behold, and long may it continue. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Phil. Bye.
And on the weekend edition this weekend, it's actually out this afternoon, we look at the agricultural sector in Australia. NAB's Leo Djurgovic is going to give us the trends, and Lachlan Marshall tells us what he's doing to manage the challenges in the sector at his farm in the Riverina.
Yeah, we're definitely looking towards technology in a big, big way. And the efficiencies that are gained through technology. And the big one for us is data to make decisions that comes with technology. I think that's helped us be incredibly efficient.
Yeah, Fitbits for cows, that's part of the answer. What? Well, tune in to find out more about that wherever you get this podcast from. Look out for it later on today. Thanks for tuning in for now. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Catch you next time.